Newsmakers is brought to you by the Illinois American Water Company. I'm Gary Moore. On today's program,
often young black artists don't control the music. They don't control even the executives who throwing the money at the camera, who driving the nice cars. I mean, they don't control. We have to look at within the context of colonialism and racism and all those things where there are others making decisions about our music. And I think that there are decisions being made. As a DJ, one of the most challenging gigs that I can ever have is to DJ either a kid's party or a corporate event.
Sociologist Dr. Marwin Spiller talks about 50 years of hip-hop and current events. He says he is optimistic about the future of black music.
I'm optimistic, cautiously optimistic. And what gives me hope is that as a group, we are more educated than the previous group, who is more educated than that previous group. So we're getting more educated as a group. And we can be hopeful about that because we think about a lot of the social problems we have, think about the music. There is a correlation between the culture we digest and one's level of education, one's experiences. All those things play into how you experience culture, how you experience music, how you experience the world. As we were speaking about off air, this whole issue with John Morant and with the Memphis Grizzlies, a basketball player who has come under increased attack, suspended from the NBA for just brandishing a gun. Certainly, on the one hand, that is out of sync with a culture that up until now celebrates guns. I mean, we love our guns. One can argue that, yeah, we love them except when a young black male holds a gun. But it does show that there is cultural pushback on this sort of culture of violence and the symbols of violence and the celebration of violence, which we can only hope that that combined with increasing levels of education, with changing politics that's happening. I mean, you know, Donald Trump does not have the fan base today that he had, you know, just 3 years ago, 4 years ago. Ron DeSantis, another major Republican candidate, I mean, he is failing in his campaign. The culture is not rallying around all of that anti-LGBTQ community, anti-wokeness. He's not getting that brought, which suggests that there's hope that things are changing or there's room for change. So I'm optimistic.
Hey, I'm glad to hear that because I've been hearing a lot of pessimism lately in a lot of the areas that you talked about, media, entertainment, politics, culture. I'm hearing a lot of pessimism. The biggest negative that we hear on a somewhat regular basis has to do with violence in our community. And you spoke to that with the John Morant that maybe, hopefully, people are not celebrating this as it is celebrated in our media. And I know you're a musicologist. You've talked with War Muhammad, and I have too. I've had War Muhammad in, and we've shared our mutual concern about how hip-hop, celebrating 50 years, nowadays has branched off into some real negative territory with regard to lyrical content. Mm-hmm. They call it drill music or trap music. And there are songs where not only are they profane and the language is B word, H word, MF, whatever. But you're also celebrating guns. Mm-hmm. I got my Glock. I'm going to clear the block. Bang, bang, N word, it's your funeral. I'm going to shoot up your mama's house. I got, you know, he was no good, so I put him in the wood, you know, mm-hmm. stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about that, that you're still hopeful that that changes. How does the moral arc of that bend toward something positive?
Well, I think it's all it's capitalism. I mean, I think capitalism created it, and capitalism will destroy it. I mean, Karl Marx, you know, famously said that, you know, capitalists are digging their own graves. The very products that they are producing will be their own demise. And I think that we're seeing this. I'm not under any illusion, for example, that the NBA cares about what's happening in African American communities, brown communities all around the country. But what they are concerned about is their bottom line. And it stands to reason then that a player like John Morant, who's in a position to perhaps be the face of the NBA, at least a young face, that he is bad for business. You know, this touting guns is not good for business. And I think that there then is room then to say that at some point we're going to reach a critical mass where the violent music is just bad for business. It's bad for communities.
So it's not enough that it's bad for black people's lives.
No, it has to become bad for business. It's bad for property values. It's bad for all the things that generate capital in a capitalist society, I suspect. And that's, you know, not to say that there is no room for the for concern about black lives, concern about young lives being taken, but we've seen it over and over and over and over again for years and years. And one of the constants is that when it becomes bad for business, when it impacts the bottom line, the capitalist machine is when we see a turn. And so I'm hopeful in that sense.
Yeah. But that suggests that we're not going to get to a better place until the power structure deems it important. I was always hopeful that regardless of what the power structure did, that we in our community still had enough strength and pride and culture that we could overcome this ourselves. We were talking before we were recording about how over the course of our journey in this country, music was a form of resistance. It held us together. It was the soundtrack of our lives. Those Africans came over singing. Those became spirituals and field hollers and ring shouts and Underground Railroad songs that were in code, you know, which morphed into the blues and then gospel. And then, you know, even with some rock and roll, definitely with R&B, you know, we're talking about Marvin Gaye, What's Going On, and Stevie Wonder and Donny Hathaway and Earth, Wind & Fire and all this positive, conscious music that kept us. And I'm thinking, okay, so we don't necessarily need the outside, because a lot of that was in protest to what was going on in the greater society. So when I hear you say you're optimistic, I'm glad to hear the optimism, but it sounds like the optimism is going to come from without. And is that because within we have imploded or disintegrated with the music?
Well, I think within, I'm reminded of a book by William Julius Wilson, a sociologist, who wrote a piece called The Declining Significance of Race. And in The Declining Significance of Race, he makes the argument that that class have become more not become as important as race and understanding the Black experience. The period of time that you describe was a time that Wilson argued that there were multi-class Black communities, that there were the Black middle class, the Black working class, the Black lower class, Black underclass lived in the same community. Oftentimes, because of segregation, the professional class was there because they could not necessarily sell their services to people outside that community. So young Black kids saw those professionals, those business folks, the teachers and the workers and everyone who lived in the same community. Once segregation ended and we were able to move wherever we want, class emerged, Wilson argued, and what was left behind in those communities that we called, you know, traditional Black communities where that music was thriving was the lower class. All those who were able to move took advantage of their class position and moved, leaving behind those who could not move. And when you have this sort of concentration of the poorest of the poor trapped in communities disconnected from all the other classes that once described the Black community or defined the Black community, and you pour on top of that, you know, all the
gasoline
of hip hop worst, you know, promotion of violence and degradation of women and culture of being, all that is wrapped in the music, compounded with the extreme poverty and the isolation. So you get a heavy dose of, you drive to Chicago, you get one violent track after a sexist track after a violent track after a sexist track. And you listen to that in the midst of your social isolation.
And that becomes the soundtrack to your life.
Correct.
And so when I grew up, there's a difference between me hearing "You're a Shining Star No Matter Who You Are" mm-hmm. and a young man listening to mm-hmm. "Bang Bang, N-Word Is Your Funeral."
Yeah, and that "Bang Bang, the N-Word Is Your Funeral" wouldn't be so impactful if that young man was able to see the plethora of the Black community and all that at its worst and at its best, you know, which we talk about a community, again, before sort of class sort of ripped through the Black community and sort of, you know, created, you know, the Black middle class, Black upper class, Black lower class, and these communities are no longer in the same spaces. Now it's very possible to live in a community, what Wilson argued, the hyper-segregated communities where everyone in your community is unemployed. Everyone in your community have some interaction, negative interaction with law enforcement. So the music becomes your soundtrack, your context for understanding the world, because you have nothing else to measure it to. You don't see people going to work every day. You don't interact with people.
Black doctors.
And so therefore you're not exposed to the vast array of music that would appeal to the entire spectrum of the Black community. You're listening to only a certain genre of music, and that's the only music you listen to. And we can talk about, you know, radio literacy, of how the radio stations now are so segregated. Once upon a time, you can turn on a Black radio station, you can hear Donny Hathaway, and you can hear,
T.I.
Anita Baker. But now, you know, you got R&B Black stations, you got hip hop stations, then you got urban hip hop stations. And so even the way we consume music is different. It doesn't reflect the large array of the Black community and the Black experience and the Black interest. It's so targeted, you know, to one. And then when you even compound it even more, where with technology, I can set my Pandora to only listen to trap music, and that's all that is coming through my radio station. My headphones is this kind of, I'm Chief Keef all day, every day. And that's something that was not always the case, and you could not isolate yourself culturally, musically, in that way. And when you compound that with the concentration of poverty, social isolation, it becomes a deadly mix. And so
And you're still optimistic.
And that's where capitalism created that. And capitalism is going to have to fix that. I'm optimistic that capitalism and its infinite search for new markets, for expanded opportunity, will figure out a way to find a different way to capitalize on that community in a way that what they have created is no longer palatable in this sort of modern context. I mean, it's out of sync. No one, the violence has seeped out everywhere. I mean, they're carjacking people everywhere. It's not just in those isolated communities. That poverty is seeping out across of the entire city, entire country. And so capitalism that created that have to find ways to contain and address that. And I see education, I see expanded opportunity, I see incorporating that group into the mainstream of society is really the only way. In the same way, you know, you think about the NBA, we want to sell NBA tickets. We want everybody to come to the basketball game. We want everybody. We don't want to be the company that promotes violence, because some of the people who can come to the games, their kids might have been impacted by some of that violence. And we don't want to be the company that support that.
And the last thing the NBA wants is for there to be some violence breakout at a Lakers game.
Correct. And so, and I think that capitalistic impulse will spread throughout the entire society, because it's reaching a point where you can't get behind that. I mean, look at our state of politics. You can't get behind Ron DeSantis and his anti-woke stuff. You don't want to be associated with that. His donors are running away from it. You can't, and I think that is only going to permeate the broader society, that it's kind of like the age of enlightenment. You know, we're becoming a new age of enlightenment, where that kind of mindset, that politics, that those cultural practices, people you don't want to live around it. You don't want to be around it. You don't want to associate it. It's not safe, and so therefore it's not profitable.
We want to remind our listeners, this is Newsmakers on WPNV, Newsmakers sponsored by the Illinois American Water Company. Always a pleasure to talk to Dr. Marwin Spiller. It's been a while, man, since we had a good conversation. And when you were talking about not wanting to be around stuff, I know some black people who don't want to be around some other black people. Mm-hmm. Is that simply a class issue, or is that something else?
I mean, it could be understood as a class issue. We still live in a society where the black community is one of the few communities where it is frowned upon to think about the vast class system that exists within the black community. And just because we look alike on the face doesn't necessarily mean that we're different. We're not a monolithic. We like different things. We have different lifestyles, different tastes and different habits. And so to say that I don't want to live around certain black people, when you put it in a context of social class, it's not all that offensive to say that, you know, there are just certain things that, you know, I prefer. And generally, if we scratch the surface, we'll see that there are likely class dynamics that frame that perspective.
Standards of living,
habits, choices, those sort of things, whether you know, like jazz, whether you like, you know, loud music coming out of your car, those generally, you know, align along class lines. I mean, it's a class issue.
Mm-hmm. When we were talking about music, you and I are both deep into music. You're a musicologist. I call you that. A lot of people look at you as a DJ, but a lot of people don't know that you're a sociologist. Mm-hmm. And DJ and sociology to me, is musicology. Okay.
Okay.
And you know, I teach music, and I'm a musician, and with the radio station, my perspective when I talk about music comes from that lens. Let's define some terms for some people so that they have a better understanding of what's happening out here now musically. Mm-hmm. And I'll start. And I have a book here. People can't see it, but it's Maurice White's biography, My Life with Earth, Wind, and Fire. Maurice White, the founder of Earth, Wind, and Fire, passed away. And before he did, this book with Herb Powell was written. He devotes a small chapter to hip-hop. Mm-hmm. And in that chapter, there's some pretty eye-opening things that I don't think a lot of people know. And, you know, War Muhammad talks about this when he's around trying to encourage positive music. And that is the record industry. When N.W.A. came out with N Word for Life, the record industry came to all the black artists, new and established, and said, we want you to put this harder edge into your music. Mm-hmm. Around the same time, Nirvana and Guns N' Roses, white hard rock groups, came out with their stuff. The industry did not come to Paul McCartney and Celine Dion and Elton John and say, we want you to infuse this in your music. There was what Maurice calls an enormous racial difference. Mm-hmm. So that kind of started the snowball off the mountain. Mm-hmm. That was the genesis. And what he also points out is that a lot of the black artists that were calling girls the B word and the H word and bragging about who they shot last night and all these gangster rappers throwing $100 bills at the camera and all this other kind of stuff, that yeah. They were not from Compton and the mean streets of Chicago and whatever. They were from the suburbs.
Yeah.
Dr. Dre is kind of like a classic example. If people Google Dr. Dre, who was considered the godfather of gangster rap, mm-hmm. he was wearing stuff that looked like Prince, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So fast forward now, 50 years of hip hop, and now one could argue the real gangsters have made their way into the studios, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And you have people like Chief Keef and King Von who are dead.
Yeah.
And others who are followed along those lines. So when you listen to trap music, drill music, whatever you want to call it, you're getting what you were referring to earlier, this constant dose of
right.
what Maurice calls self-degradation. Mm-hmm. And he asked the question, ultimately hip-hop will have to answer the question, do you degrade or uplift black character and culture?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm convinced that I don't think we get that. We don't get a Chief Keef or a King Von without hyper-segregation of urban centers that create that poverty, that desperation, a different set of values that are sort of dripped in violence and disrespect and moral depleteness and all those sort of things. You don't get that without that poverty. So I think that certainly hip-hop, as we celebrate 50 years of hip hop, I think it's...
Are we celebrating?
Well, there in a lot of circles is celebrating, acknowledging 50 years. I think it's very prudent that we also, ask the question of...
question? Do you degrade or do you uplift?
Do we degrade? Do we uplift? Has hip hop... what has hip hop done to the black community in 50 years? Has it degraded the black community? Has it uplifted the black community? What are we to expect from 50 more years of hip hop? Is it going to be a tide change of uplift, or is it going to be something that degrades? I think that music is a part of culture, which is an extension of the society we live in, and it's a reflection. It speaks to many hopes and dreams, and what one would argue their realities, And as long as those realities, those dreams are tainted by poverty, misery, chaos, and lack of education, divestment in communities, we're gonna see that. But I think that,
Is it a matter of morals and values? And I always hesitate to say morals and values because I'm not coming necessarily from a evangelical standpoint. You know, I have to be dragged to church. Yeah. Okay, and there's no curse word that I haven't heard.
Yeah,
so I'm not a prude in that sense. Mm-hmm. But when we talk about values, like valuing life, mm-hmm. or valuing our women, mm-hmm. or respecting life and respecting other people, when I listen to hip hop, song after song after song, I don't hear that. I hear a lot of degradation, and mm-hmm. to the point where, as a musician, I'm thinking, is this self-degradation passing for music?
Right. Right. And I think that's a valid concern, a valid question. And I think we have to look at it within the context of the broader sort of power structure of American society, that black artists, often young black artists, don't control the music. They don't control even the executives who throwing the money at the camera, who driving the nice cars. I mean, they don't control. We have to look at within the context of colonialism and racism and all those things where there are others making decisions about our music. And I think that there are decisions being made. As a DJ, one of the most challenging gigs that I can ever have is to DJ either a kid's party or a corporate event, because every track, you have to think about it, not only in terms of its violent content and lack thereof, but
profanity,
you know, because even
sexual,
even if it's clean, what is the message that you want to play? But that's largely around our music. Generally, Taylor Swift songs, they don't come with an explicit version. It's a clean version. There's no explicit. Justin Timberlake, it's a radio version and a main version, no explicit version. And so that music, I mean, Bruno Mars, you can play Bruno Mars with any age group.
But people, you're saying some people would complain that they don't want to hear that.
Well, I'm thinking as a DJ in my audience, you know, what's appropriate for this crowd, and oftentimes, is a challenge to play black contemporary music in all audiences
because of the
content, even if it's stripped of profanity. Often the message is the
implied,
which suggests that there are decisions being made about this genre of music as opposed to this genre of music, and so it's not just people's creativity and going to the studio and a product come out, but there are decisions being made.
Is what you're saying is, in whose interest is it for black people to have constant song after song after song talking about violence and self-degradation? It's not in our interest.
No, it's not in our interest. But as you started out, we don't control that. There are executives that are controlling, who are making decisions about musical content, about whether you're using this word versus that word. There are decisions being made that oftentimes we don't necessarily have control, because it's not in our interest. The profits that are made are not funneled into our community. They're funneled into other communities. And so,
but let's unpack that a little bit more. Okay. Because yes, there was a time where the A&R guys, and you know this, mm-hmm. Earth, Wind & Fire comes out with a song. And in, you know, Philip Bailey's biography, he talks about how when they did Shining Star, the Maurice didn't know that at night they went in and they changed this hook and this horn thing and whatever. And so you have people, executives who are sitting around listening to the song, trying to just, you know, is it going to be a hit? Is it going to not? And should we, as alchemists, should we put this in? Should we take this out? And musicians do that too. And then musicians declare, no, we want more control over our stuff. Mm-hmm. You're saying that what? You don't have that?
Well, I'm saying that if you want to make a song about degrading white women, it's likely that you can make that song, but that song won't be a mainstream song played on mainstream radio stations. It's a smaller market for that song. If you make a song degrading black women, that song has a wider audience in terms of where that song is played. That song can be played on mainstream radio. Yeah, we can bleep out any B words or whatever have you, but the content and the message of the music is there. And we know this because if we think about a song, a mainstream song that degrades white women, we'll be hard pressed to come up with a list of songs that blatantly disrespect, you know, maybe, you know, some country tracks perhaps, but again, that's not mainstream. That's a niche. But in terms of, you know, you can hear Cardi B, Gorilla, and Future, and all the hip hop artists. You can hear them on in most top 40 radio stations around the country that have played in constant rotation. And so do we know that decisions are being made, you know, as a writer, you know, I can spend days editing just one sentence, you know, and looking at, should I use and, should I use however, you know, should I use was, should I use were, and I will go back and forth editing, reading it. How does this sound like this? How does it sound like that? And so music is no different. You know, decisions are made. What song, what word to use? We know that when Michael Jackson, you know, made his song, what was the song when he said, Jew me, Skype me, mm-hmm. nobody care about us. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had to edit that song. You got to take some stuff out of that song. And so we know that decisions are made. And whether a song becomes a mainstream big hit, top 40, or whether it become only for the urban market or for the country market, those are decisions. And it's about the content. Because some tracks, the content is not going to, I mean, this can't be top 40. You can't play this.
You can't do this.
Yeah, but you can play it over here.
Right.
So,
Marvin Spiller, every time I talk to you, we always run out of time. We are out of time as usual. I know when we've talked in the past, and I don't want to speak for you, but I'm going to say this. I think you wouldn't disagree that we encourage our parents to take a more of an active interest in the music that their children listen to. A lot of times you talk to adults, they say, oh yeah, I don't listen to that stuff. That's their stuff. I don't listen to it. We encourage you to listen to it. Mm-hmm. We encourage you to take the earbuds out and say, hey, let me hear what you're listening to.
I would agree with that.
and we don't think, as an educator, we're both educators, we don't think it's healthy for a 10-year-old girl or 11-year-old girl or 12-year-old girl or 13-year-old girl to be going around singing WAP, okay? We just don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right? and so there's a lot of stuff like that that we would like to encourage people in our community to take more of an active interest. Also, you know, we have a broad spectrum of music. You know, hip-hop is just a little fraction of the total scope of music that black people have come up with. We got rock and roll, R&B, neo-soul, jazz, all kinds of jazz, blues, gospel, you name it. And we encourage you, it's like a diet. you know, on your plate. You just don't put one big hunkin' piece of meat on there. You need some vegetables, some fruit, some different stuff. And so we encourage people to broaden your child's horizons, broaden your horizons, mm-hmm. because a lot of times the kids are listening to what their parents are listening to, mm-hmm. and you don't want to be stuck on one particular genre. Mm-hmm. I was going to say stuck on something else, but I'm not going to say that. You have anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, I know that the music that your kids listen to while they're riding around in the backseat of your car becomes the music of their childhood. And it's what they remember, it's what they're going to listen to, what they're going to consider old school. When they think about the fond memories, they're going to think about the music that they listened to when they was riding around in the backseat of your car. So be mindful of what you're listening to, because they're listening too.
Yeah. Dr. Marvin Spiller, thanks for being on Newsmakers.
Thank you.
Newsmakers is sponsored by the Illinois American Water Company for WPNV. WPNV, we're Peoria's neighborhood voice.